This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last week, Edie's upset became evident, and Ruby tortured herself with self-recriminations about the events that led to Frank's death. Vi bustles in to tell Ruby that she'll take over the funeral arrangements. More than that, Vi warns Ruby that she and Edie will have to leave the house.
Church bells, competing in tones and tempo, reverberated and trembled in Ruby's organs, penetrating her bones. She reached out her arm for Edie. My little, little girl. Somewhere, a rooster crowed. Nearer, a kettle whistled. Douglas? By the time her eyes opened, the shrill noise had begun to die, and the pillow was in her arms. The bed she was in was Edie's, but Edie wasn't next to her. A flutter of alarm went through her. She moved and found the damp patch of sheet under her. Tipping out of bed, she flung back the bedding. Urine had soaked through to the underblanket. She stripped the bed, suspecting Edie would be lying low somewhere, ashamed of herself. Edie was sitting at the kitchen table, wearing the boy's dressing gown over her clothes. She whimpered soundlessly when she saw her mother. "You had an accident," Ruby said gently. Edie's breath faltered. "Did you wash yourself?" Edie nodded woefully. She slumped back, like the kapok stuffed doll, her limbs lifeless. Ruby wanted to pick her up, hold her close, warm the life back into her. But as she regarded her daughter sitting there watching her, the impulse to love her was replaced by a flux of reproach that came so close to hatred that she had to turn away. A chill draft seemed to swirl in the room and cut across Ruby's shoulders. The clock in the passage punctuated the silence. Last night she should have stopped the pendulum. The chill of aloneness around her was like a moat. On the other side of it, Edie's eyes wanted something from her that she didn't have. She straightened. They had to buck up and get on, didn't they? Routine, that's the thing. The kettle was still hot. She made a watery Ovaltine for Edie, splashed a bit of milk into it. Extra sugar wouldn't hurt. "What about breakfast?" Ruby said. Edie shook her head. Ruby got the bread knife and last half loaf out of the crock. "What shall we have with our toast?" she said, as the teeth of the knife went through the bread and bit into the board. Edie stared vacantly at the chair across the table. Frank's chair. Last night's scene played out in Ruby's mind. Frank throwing Lou away like a toy with the stuffing taken out of it. Frank crumpling to the ground. The love between the two men. Douglas's enraged grief. Why hadn't she stepped out and confronted Lou? What kept her nailed to the porch step? What paralyzed her? Why couldn't she have thrown herself between Lou and Douglas, protected him? If she had died, which is what she deserved, Frank might still have broken Lou's neck. But he might be alive. Douglas wouldn't have gone. But it would never have played out that way. Edie was still staring at nothing, her drink cold in the rabbit mug that Frank had given her. How much had she seen? Best never to ask, never bring it up. Ruby cut the burnt crusts off the toast and put another 2 slices under the grill. Let's have butter and golden syrup. That's bound to cheer you up. She held the tin in her hand. No one ever said golden syrup was good for shock or for calming the nerves. Golden syrup wasn't going to put things back the way they were or make things better. What could it do to make up for the density of the absences in this house? Replaying the episode of the previous night wasn't going to help anybody. Frank's heart could have given out at any time. The doctor had said so. It might have happened during one of his nightmares. What would Douglas have done then? She put the tin back on the shelf. They should have Marmite. A drift of smoke wafted out from the grill for a second time. Flippin' heck, Ruby said, as she threw the toast into the sink. Normally, Edie would have been laughing by now. That vacant look of hers jarred on Ruby's nerves. She clattered in the cupboard and took out a saucepan. Porridge? Throughout Edie's life, Ruby had protected her and provided for her as best she could, the only way she could. The sickening things she had done for Edie's sake! If the clock could be turned back far enough, Edie should never have been born. Ruby's hands and arms went through the motions of porridge making, pouring, mixing, stirring, watching the contents of the enamel saucepan slowly heat. So slowly. The first bubbles broke the surface. I want brown sugar on mine, said Ruby. What about you? Edie sat watching. She didn't even shrug. In a surge of fury, Ruby lifted the saucepan and slammed it hard down on the hob. Hot oatmeal splattered the stove, the wall, and her jumper. I'm bloody making porridge! She didn't care how loud she shouted. Porridge! And you're bloody well going to eat it, even if I have to shove it down your bloody throat! Oh, to hell with porridge. Let the sparrows have it later. What was going on behind Edie's eyes? She hadn't even blinked. Ruby picked up her cup of lukewarm tea, watching the tears roll down Edie's face.
It was my fault, wasn't it?
Edie said, her voice a broken squeak. Whether the teacup slipped from Ruby's hand, or whether her fingers opened, she wasn't sure. The splintering crash and the splash on her feet snapped her out of herself. She went to the fragile figure on the chair and knelt beside her, crushing her into an embrace. Edie's head nuzzled into Ruby's neck.
Mummy!
The baby words scoured out the centre of Ruby's heart. It wasn't Edie she hated. It was herself. Her own wounds. Her failures. Her weaknesses that she despised. That word had stirred up all the pain she'd denied and didn't have names for. Darling girl, it's not true, Ruby murmured. Everything in the room blurred and dissolved. She lifted Edie and clung to her. Newly released tears to course into Edie's hair. Edie stroked Ruby's wet face.
Don't cry, Mum.
Ruby took a gulp of air.
Oh, my darling girl, nothing was your fault. The hospital wasn't able to fix Frank, were they?
Edie said.
He died, didn't he?
Yes, he died.
Ruby willed her tears to stop.
Was that because of...
Edie started a question.
Shh, shh. Ruby rubbed her palm on Edie's back. Put it all out of your mind. Talking about it and thinking about it won't do anybody any good.
Do you think Frank's in heaven already?
I wouldn't know. I suppose God knows these things and we don't. That's why we let him get on with it. We get on with what we have to do here. I'm going to get another hanky. Heaven? God? What was she saying? She didn't believe any of it. Frank, laughing, cantankerous, poetry reciting, beautiful, bastardy Frank, who appreciated absurdities as much as ironies. He'd know what to say. Edie had not asked about Douglas. Just as well. Ruby read to Edie until the fair eyelashes settled on her cheeks and her breathing steadied. Then she embarked on a frenzy of cleaning. Mrs. Pierce's ornaments were given a good manicure. She twisted the corner of the cloth to poke dust out of the space between a shepherd's legs and in the folds of a maiden's porcelain lace skirt. Vi's words ate at her. Where were they going to go? What would happen to the place? People, men, would come into the house to tot up the value of everything. It would all be auctioned off. Second-hand dealers would make a profit, and people like Vi would pour through the leftovers for the church jumble. Still, whatever happened to the place, it would be clean when they came. People couldn't say Ruby Woods hadn't done her duty by Frank. She opened the door to where Frank and Douglas had slept, and not slept, in their beds. The mingled men's scent of them hung low in the air, an earthy, musky smell. The tidy room was papered with stripes of soft greens, with a motif of small brown leaves. Beds made, everything clean, which made it seem emptier and more forlorn. A red toy lorry and a blue china budgie sat on the windowsill. A wooden dresser with an oval mirror held brushes and combs in rows spaced evenly apart. She picked up a half-empty bottle of extract of limes, sniffed the stopper of the bay rum, and found a bottle of cologne, number 89. Who gave Frank that? An old tin of Macassar was behind unguents and creams, a new jar of Brill cream. Douglas had left his silver cigarette case on one of the night tables. She took the remaining four Du Maurier aside and saw the engraved inscription. Always with you. F.P. I hope so, Frank, she said. Wherever he is, he needs you. She took one of the cigarettes to the kitchen and smoked it there. The late Mrs. Pierce wouldn't mind. She wasn't ready to sit on the back porch. Ruby didn't look at the clock. In the remaining dark hours, she made two trays of melting moments, shaping each little pile of dough into a ribbed peak with the back of a wet teaspoon. Her mother had done that. The recollection bruised her. She flattened them all with a fork. When she had filled the biscuit tins, she went to the sitting room. Under Mrs. Pierce's monochrome gaze, Ruby sat on the couch and opened For Whom the Bell Tolls and wept more tears. When the words on the page began to swim and her sinuses had had enough, she put the book on the shelf and ran a bath. Maggots of horror and guilt soon ate their way into her thoughts, and she wept again into the water. By the time she got out, she was cold. In rough trousers and a warm jersey, she returned to the kitchen and went down on her knees to scrub the already clean linoleum. Dawn sent shafts of pale light through the window. As soon as the clouds looked likely to part,
Ruby slung Edie's washed sheets over the line. They should have been pegged out the day before, when it had been sunny. She cursed, muttering self-admonishments, as she raised the prop to catch what breeze there was.
"Yoo-hoo! Mrs. Ward's! Ruby!"
Pretending she hadn't heard, Ruby went inside, shut the door, turned the hob on under the smallest pan of water, and went to wake Edie, who had slept in Ruby's bed while her own mattress dried. She pulled at the covers. "Up you get, chicken. I've got the fire going. It'll be warm in the dining room. I'm cooking breakfast." Edie whimpered.
"Do I have to?"
"We'll have poached eggs on toast. Do you want beans? Come on."
"Why?"
Edie rubbed her eyes. "Because I say so. I won't have any nonsense that you're not hungry. We have to eat. We've got a busy day." Edie grunted.
"I heard Mrs. Vi say we have to leave."
Ruby peeled the bedclothes back. "Leaving or not, there are things to do, and I'm not having people say we're slovenly."
"How do you know what people will say?"
said Edie, sitting up.
"I don't care about people."
A tide of murky emotions washed over Ruby, and her hand flexed as she fought the urge to strike her daughter a backhander across the face. They stared at one another, Edie, dry-eyed, Ruby giving way to more tears. She didn't bother wiping them away. If only enough tears could clean her from the inside out. The sound of the telephone ringing was a mercy. Ruby stood in front of the phone. What if it was someone wanting Frank?
"Ring, ring."
What would she say? It might be the doctor.
"Ring, ring."
The police? What could they want?
"Ring, ring."
What if it was someone to say,
"Ring, ring,"
that they had to get out of the house?
"Ring, ring."
Or would it be Douglas?
"Ring, ring."
Edie lifted the receiver.
"Hello? Hang on, please."
She rolled her eyes as she handed Ruby the phone. Ruby spoke cautiously. "Mrs. Woods speaking." The voice on the line was crisp.
"This is Madame Hoja."
"Madam,
you are not at work."
"Work?" The word dragged out of her. "Work?"
"Mum!"
cried Edie from the kitchen.
"Yoo-hoo!"
The voice.
"Mrs. Woods, it's only me."
Ruby placed the receiver on the hall table. Whatever Madam said was spoken into a lace doily.
"I saw you put your washing out."
Vi had already taken the liberty of walking straight through to the passage. She ran her finger over the top of the dado, checked for dust specks.
"You've got the place looking nice at any rate."
Facing her, Ruby's mind went blank.
"I suppose you know you've left a pan of water boiling on the stove. By the way, I saw you forgot to leave your bottles out last night, so I've brought some milk over so you don't run short."
"We're having poached eggs for breakfast," said Edie.
"Breakfast indeed," Vi said. "It's nearly 10 o'clock. No use dropping eggs into that boiling water you've left on the stove. And why isn't that child in school?"
"School?" Ruby was losing her footing. She remembered almost drowning at a beach when she was little. The black sand had sucked at her feet and grabbed at her ankles. The sea seemed hungry enough to gobble her up. The undertow gave her up to a wave that caught and tossed her. It tried to swallow her. She had heard the adults laughing until someone had plucked her out.
"It was a terrible shock, wasn't it?"
Vi dabbed at her eye sockets with her hanky,
I can't believe it. Poor dear Frank.
She lowered her voice.
There were two stretchers last night. I didn't like to come over straight away. Do you know who?
Nobody knows. Ruby hung her head and pushed past. I should get to that pan of water.
I turned it off for you,
said Vi.
A cup of tea would be nice. Mind you, something a little stronger wouldn't hurt by the look of you.
Tea. Ruby let the current take her.
You won't allow your Edith to stay off school, will you?
Vi tucked her chin in.
You wouldn't want the truant officer coming round, would you?
A dozen foul words flooded into Ruby's mouth like bile. She bit her fist, jamming them all back. After all, the woman might need consoling herself, but Ruby couldn't do it.
You and Mr. Woods will be there, I expect.
Vi took the lid off the teapot and sniffed the inside.
Pardon?
Said Ruby.
The funeral. All Saints, of course.
Glancing at Edie, Ruby turned to Vi. Can we talk about this another time, Vi?
Edith, dear, said Vi. What about you going into your room so Mummy and I can have a little chat? Mummy might want you to put your clothes on.
Edie went off muttering about breakfast.
Things have got to be arranged, said Vi.
Frank was right. This woman wanted murdering if anyone did.
I've spoken to Reverend Willard.
Vi fluffed her plumage.
He did Mrs. Pierce's funeral. Seems like only yesterday. Of course, being that time of the year, we had some lovely flowers. Put a dampener on the festive season. Mind you, Mrs. Pierce was held in very high regard. And now, poor Frank.
Ruby closed her eyes.
You don't have to worry. Everything's in hand.
Vi tucked her chin in.
And the ladies from church will do the repast.
Funeral arrangements hadn't occurred to her. What about Douglas?
Thank you, said Ruby.
Is that all?
It's nothing more than my duty, said Vi,
putting her hanky to her nose.
You don't know how much Frank meant to me.
Yes, said Ruby. You've said. When is
the funeral?
Vi tightened her mouth.
Thursday morning at 11 o'clock. All Saints, up on Church Street. Well, I'm off up to town to put the notice in the Times, and if I'm quick, I'll catch this evening's Standard for the late edition.
Oh, of course. I didn't think.
Why should you? It isn't exactly your place to bother with that. You were only his housekeeper. Although I would have thought Mr. Woods might have...
A shadow passed over Ruby. She had forgotten she was Frank's housekeeper. Whatever friendship had grown between them, she now had no place in what happened next.
Mr. Woods at work, is he?
Vi asked. Ruby caught a glimpse of blonde hair, lifted into sight by a draught on the other side of the doorway. Edie, eavesdropping.
Do you know what Mr. Woods is arranging in the way of a wreath?
Said Vi. No, Ruby said. That was just the sort of thing Douglas would do, should do. She didn't know where to begin with all that, and she didn't want to. Vi looked her up and down.
Yes, well,
she said with a sniff.
There'll be an inquest and all that later on. As for this place, I dare say Frank's solicitors will be taking things in hand, and they'll be the ones letting you know. Poor Frank didn't have any family left. There was a little girl... That was tragic, too. Oh, well, all up to the public trust, I suppose, in the end.
Ruby choked.
Vi, please go home. I have things to do.
And I'd better get to the newspaper office, Vi said crisply. Just remember not to pack anything that didn't already belong to you. I know everything that's here.
Ruby opened the door and held it. Goodbye, Vi. Cold air came in as Vi scuttled out. Ruby gave the door a kick, slamming it shut.
You can go to buggery!
Edie appeared, looking reproachful, her front teeth over her bottom lip.
Well, she can, Ruby fumed. Who does she think she is?
The only silver lining about finding another place was not having anything more to do with her.
What did Janice say about finding a place together?
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.